Welcome to My Song, Your Song, Our Song, Episode 2. I'm Holden Slathery, here with a guy wearing a Caustic Phlegm t-shirt. That's my co-host, Mike Warsh, who has a vast collection of t-shirts of different metal bands. In this podcast, we explore our musical tastes and where they converge and where they diverge. In each episode, we talk about one song that's my song, one song that's Mike's song, and one song that's our song, meaning one we both already know and love. And don't be fooled by the t-shirt, because that's not all Mike listens to. And in fact, today we don't have any metal in the lineup. Today, my song is Jack of Speed by Steely Dan.
And my song is Baby Britain by Elliott Smith.
And our song is Everything is Everything by Lauryn Hill. So we're starting out with Jack of Speed. It's from Steely Dan's album Two Against Nature, which came out in the year 2000. They hadn't put out an album in about 15 years when they put this out, and they won the Grammy for Album of the Year, beating out Eminem's Marshall Mathers LP and Radiohead's Kid A, among others. So I've read that there was some anger among young people at the time. You know, people thought boomers were picking the winners, and I'm sure that played a huge factor, even as someone who's a big Eminem fan, I can't blame them one bit, because this is really one of my favorite albums of all time. To me, it's a masterpiece. It just speaks to me and I really vibe with it. And I like it better than the older Steely Dan albums I've listened to, even though those are really good too. Mike, we're here talking about music. I got into Steely Dan through a friend I met in my 20s who I mainly connected with around music. So I was living in upstate New York in a little city called Cortland. I got a job there and moved there not knowing anybody. And, you know, I wanted to meet some people outside of my coworkers. So one night I was at this bar, started a conversation with a guy named Dave. And, you know, he seemed cool. I asked him for his number, and then kind of later found out, you know, he was asking me if I was gay, which just kind of shows like the challenges of making friends, you know, as a guy, you know, and like, you know, getting other people's numbers. It was kind of funny, but
not that there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, of course. but we became friends. You know, I saw him. I don't know if I called him or anything, or we just saw each other at the bar again. But yeah, we started talking one night, after bars close, he invites me back to his place just to listen to music and play some Steely Dan for me. And I barely knew Steely Dan. I think like most people, I probably knew about four of their songs, but didn't really know that they were Steely Dan songs. Just after hearing a few, like my reaction was really positive. I remember he got really excited and he shouts out, "You're a Dan man." he was excited about that. And so he lent me a few of their albums, Asia, Katie Lied, and this one, Two Against Nature. So I wasn't like an old fan hearing them make this comeback album. I just heard them all at the same time. But I never doubted that this one was my favorite, this Two Against Nature. And I just love, you know, I really like every song on this album, but there's none that I like better than this one, Jack of Speed. Steely Dan's very jazzy band. This song also kind of has a bluesy sound on top of that. And on any Steely Dan song, the instrumentals are just layered beautifully. They always say these guys were perfectionists, and they just put together a variety of different sounds that keep their songs changing, not repetitive. I love the instrumentals in this song. I thought that the lyrics sounded cool, but I really didn't know what they were about. I think, just like with a lot of Steely Dan songs, their lyrics are really smart and dark and funny. But sometimes not very obvious what they're talking about. And then you have these like really energetic, you know, beats and melodies, you know, funky sounds. And sometimes that's just enough. You don't really think you need to know the lyrics, although they sound like they're interesting. At least that was my thought. But then I looked up the lyrics to this, you know, getting ready to do this podcast, and was really interested in finding out what this song is about. So it's you know, it's about a drug addict named Teddy, and he's not a jack of all trades. He's a jack of speed. You know, he's a meth head, and it's a dark, hopeless song with a message that this guy is too far gone, and he's never going to be the old Teddy again. So I'll play kind of early on in the song here. So you get the feel for it, and you know the lyric, you know, Teddy's rolling now most every night, skating backwards at the speed of light. That's quite an image and metaphor there. And it goes on to say he's changed in a thousand little ways. And so then, and he goes into the narrator goes into this party they were at, and he goes, that right wing hooey sure stunk up the joint. He's gone. Which is interesting. I think, you know, many of the characters from Steely Dan songs are kind of liberals from New York City. And you've got this image of this meth addict. He's rattling off some right wing talking points at this party. And everyone's like, damn, what happened to this guy? And I just wonder, you know, is that like a common thing that drug addiction might make someone like more right wing? Any thoughts on that, Mike?
That's interesting. I've never thought about that before. I don't know if specifically more right wing, but I think as you start to unravel and you start to lose control over more and more aspects of your life, you do whatever you can to gain that control back. And I think going right wing is kind of an extreme way to go about it. But it would make sense if, you know, your life is unraveling before your eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So then it kind of goes on and says, you know, he's talking to Teddy's wife or girlfriend probably, and he says, you know, he can't hear you, honey, that's all right, pack some things and head up into the light, don't stop, he'll be calling out your name, but don't stop when you hear him plead. Personally, I haven't had a lot of experiences with people dealing with addiction, but it definitely conjures some images for me. You know, I'm thinking things like Breaking Bad, you know, of like the character Jesse Pinkman, estranged from his family. And it's like, you know, they don't trust it, or like they feel bad, but they're closing the door on him as he's pleading and apologizing because they're just like, we can't trust it anymore. And so, yeah, I know many millions of people out there have more experience with this, but, you know, it's something very painful. So the lyrics are now that I know the lyrics, I think they're like just as interesting as the instrumentals. What did you think of this song, Mike?
I loved the song, just like the last song you shared. I'm very happy we're doing this podcast because you're exposing me to a lot of stuff I wouldn't listen to, stuff I don't typically lean into, like jazz specifically. This actually reminded me a bit of Dave Matthews Band. Has kind of like this folky background guitar with an overlay of funky keyboards and a smooth saxophone. And then you build with those top layer instruments, like the saxophone specifically in this song. And it, you know, it took me to a place that I don't typically visit in music because I just don't dabble in the genre as much. But yeah, I absolutely love this. And I had no idea it was about a drug addict, but now re-listening to it and having you explain the lyrics, it really is much darker than the music sounds like it would be, just like the number 41 song that you shared last week. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, two bands I love. I would say the biggest difference, definitely lyrically, between the two bands is Dave Matthews is very hopeful. Over the majority of his songs have a kind of a very hopeful message, whereas Steely Dan is all about being like, dark humor and like hopelessness and like, cynicism is kind of like the theme of their lyrics, I think. Yeah. Do you want to get into your song, Mike?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me give a little bit of background on why I picked it. So Elliott Smith is actually my, everybody says they don't have a favorite artist. There are too many to pick from. I think that's also true for me. But if I'm absolutely forced to pick somebody, it would be Elliott Smith. And I think I look at him a little differently than a lot of people who aren't as familiar with his catalog look at him. A lot of his songs are sad and folky, played only with an acoustic guitar, down tempo, etc. But he also has a number of albums, specifically his last three albums, EXO, which is what this song is off of, Figure Eight, and From a Basement on the Hill. That go a little closer towards Paul McCartney's style of writing for the Beatles, at least for EXO and Figure Eight. And then I'd say maybe he's a little closer to John Lennon for From a Basement on the Hill. But the lyrics are still for the most part pretty dark, but the melodies are super happy and very, very poppy. And I think he, during his lifetime, he wanted to write music that everyone can appreciate, which is, really difficult. Pop's arguably the hardest genre of music to write. And that really came out in EXO. EXO is my personal favorite album by him. And I was exposed to him, I think, well, everybody knows Needle in the Hay. I think I first heard that in the Royal Tenenbaums in like 2004, 2005, whenever that came out. But I didn't know any of his other music until one of my good friends, Curtis Cooper, who's a rock folk, multi-instrumentalist artist based out of Philadelphia. They showed me Elliott Smith, and the way they showed it to me, Elliott Smith's music absolutely blew my mind. The chord progressions, the lyrics. It was a little hard for me to get into him in the beginning because I don't think he has a great singing voice. Maybe one of the worst singing voices out of all the artists I truly adore. But once you're able to get past that and see how his voice complements his music, it's really not hard to fall in love with what he's doing with his music. The reason why I picked this particular song, Baby Britain, is because I think it really showcases, better than many other songs, his transition into the pop genre and, becoming a little closer to the Beatles, which were major influences on him. And the layering of different pop instruments that he's using, piano, the bass, a lot of it written in minor keys. It's just so complex and really fun to pay attention to. I'm going to play two clips really quick from the song. Okay, so here's the first clip I'm going to share. It's the way the song starts out. And I'll explain why I like it and why I shared it right after I play it. So here it is. So I picked that clip to show the way all the different instruments work together. You have the bass building in the background, going from lower notes to higher notes, and then staying in the higher note range. You have a very rhythmic poppy, happy sounding drum tune to complement the bass line. And then you have those minor notes that Elliot is playing on the piano. Then you have the higher notes, those minor keys that Elliot's playing on top, to complement all the instruments that are playing in the background. I also like the lyric, fights problems with bigger problems. The content of the lyrics, he's basically calling Britain out for a number of different things, but colonization is one of the biggest ones. And I think it's kind of a belief, a common belief that British people are miserable in many ways. They don't enjoy life day to day the same way other European countries do, especially countries around the Mediterranean. And I think when he's saying fights problems with bigger problems, he's referring to Britain through colonization, pushing their troubles and the misery that they were facing to others across the world. That's my interpretation of it. I'm sure there are multiple interpretations of it. But I did want to play one clip from the bridge.
All right, let's hear it.
When you're saying goodbye, like you want to say
I absolutely adore that bridge. I think it showcases the standard Elliott Smith bridge, where it builds to a very high climax. His vocals get into a much higher pitch, but the way the shifts between the different instruments, the way it builds is it goes heavy on vocals, drums, and bass, and then it kind of eases more into the piano. He plays the keys almost like a harpist chord, and then it ends with electric guitar, and then it flows back into the way the song writes. And I think it really showcases how much thought he actually put into his music. And to get all those different instruments playing different notes to work together so harmoniously, I think is an incredibly difficult task. And it's honestly why he's my favorite musician.
I really like this song too. It was really catchy. It got into my head after hearing it a couple times. It's very upbeat. I don't know a lot about Elliott Smith, mainly, you know, only knew his songs from Good Will Hunting, which even then I kind of knew the songs, but didn't know they were his until kind of reading up more. But that's one of my favorite movies, and you know, those songs create the mood. But yeah, so I've just figured more of his stuff was slow and mellow, and it made me wonder, you know, how many other faster songs he has. And I'm sure we'll be hearing more together. But yeah, my first impression was honestly how soft the singing started out in comparison with the piano. And then it got louder, but the other instruments were just turned up and the vocals were kind of low. And I didn't get that as much in the clips that you played. So maybe it was like more on my Spotify. But it sounds like his voice is kind of like another instrument. Like it's just not as loud as I'd like it to be. And I think there's a lot of thought that went into the lyrics, but I think they would have been more understandable kind of just if they had been turned up more. So I'm just wondering to ask you, like, what do you think about, do you think this was the right volume? Do you have an issue with the vocals?
That's a really good question. I I honestly haven't thought about it that way. The only issue I have with his vocals are the quality of his singing voice. But what you said totally makes sense. I also have a it's hard to do like a full analysis of the sound stage and the volume listening to it via Spotify just because it's a compressed music file. And what I was just playing was a WAV file completely uncompressed. And so you probably heard differences in sound stage and volume just from the quality of the file. But yeah, when on a record, I think all of the volumes for all instruments, including his voice, are perfect for me. I'll have to play it for you on vinyl sometime. It's a different experience.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, because honestly, a couple times if my volume wasn't up all the way, I kind of just thought that he's kind of oh, he's just kind of mumbling and getting ready to really start singing. I'm like, oh wait, no, he is really singing. But yeah, that was partly, the recording was a huge part of that, the recording that I was hearing, the file. So yeah, but yeah, I really liked it. I don't know, with the lyrics, it also kind of seemed like it could be I don't know, metaphorical, it was also about a relationship, but then at the same time commentary on politics. Although as I looked up, some interpretation that Baby Britain is actually America, because we're descended from them, we're Baby Britain.
Wow. Okay. That completely changes my understanding. Okay. Yeah.
But I mean, colonialism is still, relevant for, either way.
No, absolutely. And I think it is also about a relationship. That's one of the reasons, another reason why I love him so much. Even his lyrics have multiple layers to them. But yeah, I also thought it was about a relationship when listening to it, in addition to, I guess, America now, but I thought it was a scathing review of Britain.
Yeah. All right. Well, next we have Everything Is Everything by Lauryn Hill. It's from The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, which I would definitely put on my, top 30, maybe 20 favorite albums of all time. And this was another single that came after Doo-Wop, That Thing, which, was definitely the one that's got the most airplay. And but this one, it just has such a great beat. Produced by Lauryn Hill in partnership, with other musicians like John Legend, and this quartet that does the strings. So yeah, I think this beat has like a pace where she can sing to it, but also rap to it, and it just works really well to put both of those skills on display in a really radio-friendly hip hop song. I didn't totally understand what Everything Is Everything meant. But what I've, read recently is that it's a slang expression meaning all is well or everything is going according to plan. And that makes sense. She's talking about societal injustices, but she's saying that change comes eventually. So it's a hopeful message. And I think it also sounds spiritual, kind of like we're all connected, everything is connected. And then where she starts out in the first verse, it goes like this. So she's saying, she wrote it for youth, who struggled, and it seems we lose the game before we even start to play. But then later when she raps, she talks about her power to affect change. It's kind of one of those verses where it seems like she's just kind of talking about being the best rapper, kind of bombastic, type of verse. But she's also she's saying she says, now hear this mixture where hip hop meets scripture, develop a negative into a positive picture. So she's really showing herself as not just a rapper, but kind of like a preacher. She's taking the negative in the world and using her voice to create positive change. And I think she had the power to do that, but also she got so big, so young, and there was so much pressure on her. And that's kind of like a kind of extra layer of pressure, I think, when you're expected to be more than just an artist and really like this kind of, you know, figure for social change. What are your thoughts on the song, Mike?
I adore this song. This is my favorite song off this album. I didn't know that she produced it. I always wondered in the back of my mind who produced it, because I absolutely love the way the beat works, especially when the in the very beginning of the song, there's like this vocal part that's like, and then the drums kick in. Actually, I'll play it really quick. We about to step in. Just a perfectly timed kick drum snare to complement the beat in the beginning there. It really gets you in the mood to hear the song. This is one of my favorite party songs. I like playing this, like I like playing it for people. I like playing it before I go out. It does make me feel positive. And one of the other aspects of the lyrics, you were mentioning everything is everything. You know, things are going to get better. I also look at it like, you know, everything is connected. After winter must come spring. We're existing through this, you know, we're floating through space time, not to get too hippie, but floating through space time, and everything is connected and everything comes around full circle in a very positive message. Yeah, I honestly can't think of a single thing I dislike about this song. The lyrics, the beat, you were mentioning the way she works her vocals in different ways, rapping, singing. It's all incredible to me.
Yeah, same here. No possible critiques of this song in the negative. So, yeah, this has been great hearing Steely Dan and Elliott Smith and Lauryn Hill. Any other parting comments before we wrap up here, Mike?
No, nothing from me. Thank you very much for hanging out with us. Really appreciate it.
All right. Well, we'll see you next time on My Song, Your Song, Our Song.